two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. This Religion Today broadcast is in memory of David Herard, who I considered a friend. He went from non-believer to a Christian. He was not a Latter-day Saint. He was Catholic. David Herard died a few short months ago, and I want you to hear his amazing story. I first talked to David by telephone in 1966 after a mutual friend suggested that I call him. He was living in a duplex at the top of Bengal Boulevard in Cottonwood Heights, Utah. Later, he moved back to Bangor, Maine, close to where he had grown up. David was fairly short in stature, about 5'6", but he was very strong with an intense personality. David had a small mustache and a large smile. He was born in 1946, grew up in Waterville, Maine, on what he described as the tough side of town. During high school, a couple of his friends were killed in fights, which left David angry with life. David decided to join the Marines. He enlisted 3 months before he graduated from high school and volunteered to go to Vietnam. Because of his upbringing, David took wars, helping the oppressed, fighting for freedom, and the downtrodden very seriously. He believed life, religious, and financial freedom should not be taken lightly. He believed if not protected, they would be lost. I guess the religious part of which is somewhat ironic because at that time in his life when he was younger, he was an atheist or maybe an agnostic. He was not a believer. The day David graduated from high school, he was sent by the Marines to Parris Island, South Carolina. He stayed there for 3 months, then was sent to North Carolina for field telephone and radio communications training. After that, he was sent to the 8th Communications Battalion for 3 months. Then he volunteered to go to Vietnam. In January of 1966, he had a week and a half of leave, then reported to Camp Pendleton, California for advanced infantry and jungle warfare combat training. When he finished that, he shipped out for Vietnam, arriving in May of 1966. David landed at Chu Lai Air Force Base, which was under mortar attack at the time. Quite a dramatic change from landing on a commercial airliner, processing for duty as a Marine, and then winding up in a Quonset hut all in the same day. He was assigned to be a wireman with 1st Marines Battalion 11th Artillery Battery. He was part of a team that kept the landlines functioning in the field. To get David used to the climate, for the first 3 weeks, he was assigned to fill sandbags. After he was acclimated, David was assigned to a 4-man wire team. 3 fixed wires taken down by the enemy. The 4 stood guard with an automatic rifle. They worked 1 week on, 1 week off for 2 months. Then David was assigned with 12 other Marines to guard an ammo dump, which was a little bit larger than the size of a football field. They had grenades and automatic rifles to guard it. They were in hostile territory. Viet Cong were all over the place. David described it as 100% alert every night or die and work hard all day. When trucks drove in with new ammo, David and the other 12 Marines unloaded them and stowed the ammo at the proper place. After 3 weeks, David was then assigned to the 1st Marine Division near Da Nang, which was running combat operations. He was assigned to be a radio operator for an infantry unit. He was replacing a radio operator who was shot and killed by the Viet Cong. The life expectancy for field Marines was very short because the Viet Cong were trying to destroy everything U.S. Just a few weeks after David was there, while his team was repairing downed wires for communication, he was standing in a group with 3 other Marines. The Viet Cong detonated a booby trap that was made from 3 hand grenades. It blew up right in the middle of him. 2 of the Marines were killed instantly. One had multiple shrapnel wounds and was unconscious. David Herard was the only one left standing at the edge of the hole where the explosion took place. Everybody else, to use David's description, was blown all over the place. David had shrapnel in his legs. The explosion had ruptured both of his eardrums. He couldn't hear anything. David was sent to Okinawa to recuperate, which took nearly 6 months. His hearing returned after ear surgery, and David put in his papers to go back to Vietnam. Before he was allowed to do that, after such horrendous injuries, David was required to sign a waiver of his rights to return to the States. David did so and arrived back in Vietnam in February of 68, just in time for the Tet Offensive. After landing in Da Nang, David was assigned to the 1st Marines Battalion. The Marine units were suffering anywhere from 50 to 60% casualties in the area where he was assigned. New Marines with combat experience were always needed to replace those who were being killed. David was a corporal. In the last week of June of 68, he was assigned to Hill 881 North near the Quezon area. David's unit was running daily search and destroy missions in the bush. He was assigned to do 3 jobs, be a wireman, a radio operator, and a grunt, which just meant that he had to do anything that someone of a higher rank told him. Because of all the casualties, everyone had to do extra duties. When David was assigned to Hill 881 North, there were over 250 Marines. A month later, 1 in 4 had been killed. Then one day, as he was doing his jobs, David had an intense premonition that he was going to be hit by enemy fire and die. 4 days later, he was evacuated and assigned to Hill 681, 5 miles away. David thought, I'm going somewhere else. Maybe I won't die after all. But that night, David and others landed on Hill 681. The hill ran into heavy firefighting, which lasted from midnight till about 5 a.m. Viet Cong were coming into the camp through the wire perimeter. It was face-to-face fighting, kill or be killed. To be prepared, David carried 15 20-round magazines, 6 hand grenades, a full bandolier with more ammo. In the morning, after the firefight, David had only 1 magazine with 8 rounds left. All the other Marines were in the same situation. Everybody was looking around, looking for ammo. Around 7 a.m., after everybody had rested for a while, it was time to stock up on food, more ammo, and other necessities. But everyone was tired and didn't want to take care of it. So David got angry and said, to hell with you, I'm going to do it. And he started running for the ammo supply, which was about the length of a football field away from where everyone was resting by the side of a little rise that gave bit of cover. 2 hours later, at 9 a.m., David was on his 9th or 10th trip when some enemy rockets started landing close by and exploding. The Viet Cong had dialed in their location, but David was so angry at everyone at the Viet Cong and at life that he said to himself, "To hell with it, all they can do is kill me." We're going to take a short break right now. When we come back, more of David Herard's intense Vietnam experience. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. If you have a question about this broadcast or any other broadcast, send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to respond. martinstanner@gmail.com. We'll be right back after this. Stay tuned.
Religion Today with Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. I'm telling the story about my friend David Herard, who had an amazing experience at Vietnam. I dedicate this program to him and his quite extraordinary life because he passed away just a few short months ago. So when we took our break, David Herard was on his 9th or 10th trip coming back and forth to get ammo. The Viet Cong had dialed in their site, their location. Rockets were starting to land and explode, but David was angry at everything, so he just kept going. On the next, which turned out to be his final trip, when he came over the crest of a little hill, a rocket landed about 20 feet behind him. When it exploded, it picked David up and threw him 20 feet down the hill. He landed on both knees and fell forward onto his head. His right arm was wrapped around behind him on his back somewhere. David felt around for his right arm and pulled it back in front of him. It was all torn up. His attention was focused on that right arm and how horribly it was mangled. So he didn't notice what had happened to the rest of him as he stood up. One of his buddies, seeing him, yelled, "Look at your legs." He looked down and they were shredded and bleeding badly. David collapsed and lay there on the ground. The other Marines retrieved him and tried to stop the bleeding. While the corpsman was working on David, he felt tired, like he was going to sleep, and he thought, "I've had enough of this. I'm done for anyways. I had this premonition that I was going to die. This is it. I'm going to die, and I really don't care." David closed his eyes to die, but right then, intense pain caught up with him. David closed his eyes but continued to cry out in pain. He heard one of his Marine buddies say, "You got to give him a morphine shot. Give him a morphine shot for the pain." The corpsman said, "I can't. It would just leak back out. It won't do any good." David had shrapnel wounds in both feet, both legs, both cheeks, both arms, both hands, the back of his neck, the small of his back. After hearing the corpsman talk about him, David was sure he was right. He was going to die. Everything went dark as he went unconscious. Then David saw a light coming towards him. All of a sudden, he felt great, wonderful. There was no pain. It was gone. The light kept getting closer and brighter until it was brighter than anything he'd ever seen before, even brighter than the sun. When the light reached David, he opened his eyes and saw a river. Across this river was a crowd of people waving at David, gesturing him to come across the river to them. They all seemed really happy. David had an intense feeling of warmth, happiness, great tranquility. On David's side of the river, everything was white. Closer to the river, There were shades of green. The water was a shimmering blue, and David could tell that the water was moving. On the other side of the river, it was white too, but there were also intense colors. There were trees, bushes, flowers, vividly colored flowers. The bushes, shrubs, and flowers were similar to the ones on Earth, he said, but they were bigger and their colors were far brighter and they were far more varied. Everything was very warm. David had the feeling he knew the people on the other side of the river, but he couldn't make out their faces. They were too far away. Some he somehow knew were relatives, and others he thought were Vietnam buddies who had been killed earlier. He could tell everybody was dressed in white, some in robes, some in shirts and trousers, but they were all in white clothing. There was no sun, but somehow light was coming from everything. David could sense the feelings of the people on the other side of the river and knew that they were overjoyed to see him. David had just been horribly wounded, but everything worked while he was on the other side. His legs, his hands, everything was just fine. He also had the feeling that he knew why things are the way they are here on Earth and everything else too. In other words, he knew why all the problems on Earth existed. He had this great knowledge poured into him, which he described as an overwhelming feeling of knowing. But he said that when he came back, it was like a shield that was in place so that he couldn't remember it. David started to move towards people on the other side of the river. He wasn't walking. He was just moving. The instant he thought that he wanted to move, he did. As he got towards the river and the people, he felt a hand on his shoulder stopping him. David couldn't move. His eyes were locked straight ahead looking at these people. He had an intense knowing. He knew it was the hand of God on his shoulder. Then God's voice said, "David, it's not your time. Don't be afraid about not staying here, but you must go back." When God's hand came on David's shoulder, he had an overwhelming feeling and sense of love and tranquility. He instantly and completely knew everything that we are here looking for on Earth, but have such a hard time finding. David said he didn't want to go back to Earth. It felt so loving and wonderful there. But then he felt God's embrace and his intense love. And he could see the most bright and intense light on his side coming from behind him where God was standing. He felt a warmth throughout himself, and he described it as a feeling of all the love there is everywhere and anywhere. Then in the blink of an eye, in an instant, David was back in his body. He opened his eyes, and the corpsman was pounding on his chest, doing CPR and screaming, "Don't you dare die on me." An hour later, David was helicoptered off the hill. When David first arrived in Japan, Navy doctors were going to amputate his right arm and left leg. But David was quite animated and refused. The doctors told David he would never be able to use him again. But he said, "I will prove you wrong." For the rest of his life, David had problems with his right arm and his left leg. They were constantly in pain, but he did use them again. It took him over a year to recover. He could walk a little bit after 6 months. He had to learn to write left-handed because his right hand did not work well. I asked David if he knew why he was sent back. He said no, but he just tried to do his best after that, just to forget himself and to love others and to help them. I asked David if he knew how he was different after his experience. And he said, "Well, for one thing, I knew there was a God. Also, instead of being angry, I try to feel love towards others." He said he especially loved children because they were so pure and innocent. When I first spoke with David. He had told almost nobody about his experience. I asked him if it could be a dream, and he said, no, it was more intense, more vivid than waking life is. This was no dream. I know the difference. He said, the most important message I would like people to understand is that we are not who we think we are. And he said, by that I mean that we have that side of us that is extremely good, but we keep pushing it aside and concentrating on selfish interests. We keep thinking, I want more money, things, fame, but what most people want won't make them happy. What will make you happy is to love others and to help them. David Herard passed away helping others. He was a paramedic and part of a rescue team in Maine. He had a heart attack. Join me again next week. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless. And I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson. And unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.